Pickaxe.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, and welcome back to The Review of Death, a Doctor Who podcast, your fortnightly home for Doctor Who news and reviews. I'm Matthew Toffolo. I'm joined as ever by Billy Garrett-Jopp.
Hello.
And later in the programme, we'll be joined by my brother, Jonathan Toffolo, to talk about Paradise Towers and some of the casting news of Doctor Who.
Programme, you make it sound so official and...
Thank you. And join us later, because we're going to have a nice giveaway, a surprise giveaway, so stay tuned for that. But before we get into all that stuff, Billy, what the hell is the Hooniverse?
I don't bloody know. Yeah. But I feel like it's something Disney have gone, we'll have a bit of that, you know, and we'll put it all over the place. We'll, like, I can picture on the loading screen of Disney Plus, Marvel, you know, Star Wars.
Yeah.
National Geographic, Star, and Doctor Who.
Yeah.
It feels like it's going to happen at some point because there's so much they can put on already.
Yeah.
I mean, not that many people are going to bother watching that if they're not interested in Doctor Who
But
beforehand.
You never know. People might be like, oh, what's this? Well, I've heard of this Doctor Who stuff.
What's Torchwood? Oh, no, it's got him in it.
Oh, that, every episode redacted.
Yeah, every episode's just got a big black bar over one person's head. Yeah, I mean, the Hooniverse is something that has come into being, we think, in the last couple of days.
Yeah.
But actually, I think somebody found that a listing had been made for a company called Hooniverse Limited.
Oh, I remember this. Oh, this rings a bell.
And so it feels like maybe things have been in the works for a little while. Shuti Gatwa obviously posted something on Instagram. It's a photo of himself with, you know, the home of the Hooniverse behind him.
Yeah.
And I think that probably means we're getting spin-offs galore.
Yeah. Because otherwise it would have been home of Doctor Who.
Yeah, and a photo of him with the TARDIS would have been enough. But, I mean, the Hooniverse is kind of a name that's waiting to be copyrighted.
Expanded upon. It's you've got your MCU.
Exactly.
Doctor Who Cinematic Universe. No,
let's not get into the minutiae of it because we might go mad. But I thought something that might be fun next week.
Right.
Or no, in 2 weeks' time from when you're watching this, if you go out and watch it on the day it came out.
Yeah.
We should come in with four spin-offs each.
Right.
And pitch them.
Right.
Like, I want a synopsis.
Oh my God.
You know, I want a title. You've got to have one cartoon in there. And you've got to bring me four original programmes to pitch to Disney Plus.
One cartoon? What, you mean I need to sketch what this
No, just one animated series.
Oh, fine, okay.
Out of the four.
Fuck me, right.
And you've got to bring me four brand new original series to pitch to Disney Plus. To go on the network.
This is,
you know,
okay.
Maybe across a year or 2 years of programming. This is aside from Doctor Who.
Yeah.
But there's going to be a couple of caveats. I'm not going to, you know, put them out there just yet.
Right.
But I think that might be fun because we're going to go through some suggestions that people have put to us.
Yeah.
On Twitter. And they're a bit mental.
Are they?
Some of them are hilarious and some of them are certifiable. But we'll go through them.
How many of them are like genuine? How many of these people are like, actually, no, I really want this one?
See, the people that have done that, I've sort of ignored. Because they've also... Because a lot of those are Eighth Doctor.
Yeah.
And I think it's fair to say that probably won't happen.
Sadly, yeah.
I think one caveat we should come up with for our Hooniverse pitches in a fortnight's time.
Yeah.
Is you cannot have any Doctor, past, present, or future,
right,
in your series.
I mean, those would have been the guides that I would have put enforced upon myself anyway.
Yeah, so exactly.
Because I just think, you know.
No Daleks.
Interesting.
No Cybermen.
Cool.
That's it. God, those are the three rules.
Imagine telling that to Big Finish. Christ.
I know, they'd be out of business within a week. No Cats spin-offs. That bloody new Earth box set that went for one volume.
Wow.
So let's have a look. Yeah, a lot of Eighth Doctor, Time War, da-da-da-da-da. This is a great one from Floppy Lion. Finger fun with Zelin. Zelin plays practical jokes on an unsuspecting public with hilarious consequences.
Very good.
Which
I like
sounds
it.
Absolutely beautiful.
Pull my finger. Wait.
Hey, what's going to happen there? Yeah, there's a couple of good ones here. Peladon Game of Thrones.
Right, nice.
That sounds like fun.
I mean, I think a Peladon, yeah.
A Peladon series would be good yeah. anyway. Miss Hawthorne's Mystical Hour.
Miss who?
Miss Hawthorne.
What's she from?
From the Demons.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, sorry.
Miss Hawthorne investigates magical and mysterious goings-on in a world outside Devil's End.
Wow.
That sounds cool.
Now, how is that happening? Is this a drama?
I think we're going to have to recast as a drama.
Is it a drama? Is
yeah,
it? Okay.
I think so.
I was envisioning some sort of, like, Ghost Watch type scenario.
Well, you know, the Hooniverse is ever-expanding, Matthew. Yeah. Anything could happen. Matthew Purchase says, The Emperor of Games from Bad Wolf Studios, a series of iconic game shows reimagined from Satellite 5.
Oh, interesting.
Friends of the Doctor, played by real members of the public, also compete in epic challenges within the Hooniverse for a cash prize to defeat the Emperor Dalek.
Oh.
That's a bit like the James Bond series that's coming from Amazon, which I applied to work on and it didn't happen.
No, I think you were going to say, I applied to be on it.
I applied to appear and it didn't happen. Deborah says, Beep the Meep spin-off, stop motion, made by Aardman, an exact redo of Shaun the Sheep, but Shaun is swapped for Beep. That's the only change. Same theme tune.
Right.
Life's a treat with Beep the Meep. We can do that. Vic Reeves, yeah. We can bring him in. We can do that. Survivor's style invasion of the Dalek prequel. Call the Midwife, but it's the Sisters of Plentitude. a casualty-style medical drama set on Necros. A prequel to Revelation of the Dalek, so it can feature Tass and Beaker, and we can dive into her unrequited love for Mr. Jobel.
Oh, wow.
That sounds grim. Like fun. Yeah, I mean, there's only one way that's going to end, and we know exactly how it's going to end.
Toupee on the Steps.
Toupee on the... I mean, that's a great title.
Yeah.
Bring back Lady Christina. That's not going to happen, Matt Kraut, I'm afraid. Otherwise, we're all running out of ideas. Linda. I mean, one that I think people feel is kind of guaranteed. So I think we have to exclude it from our Hooniverse ideas in a fortnight's time. Would be the companion, you know, what AA meeting that they set up in Power of the Doctor, because that feels like it's sort of been set up and running.
Yeah,
but. I don't know. What's the likelihood of that happening? Do you reckon you can get Bradley Walsh out of the Chase studio for 6 months?
I don't think the AA thing will happen. Well, I don't think it's really got legs as a spin-off. I think UNIT having, rotating guest companions might have more legs.
Yeah.
Because she said something like, oh, I might have some work for you lot.
Which, I mean, and we know that they're back in the Russell Who. So, Pating Mukbangs. Jack, which sounds like a great idea for a series. The Quest is the Quest, a fascinating look at the 100,000 years the Minions spent looking for the P7E before they met the Doctor and Leela in Underworld. These are some really deep cut references. I'm glad that everybody's going for it.
My God.
The Terry Nation Dalek spin-off from the 60s.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, I don't think we're going to get the Daleks in Shooty's first series.
No.
Do you want to introduce them in spin-offs only for them to sort of... Because if they're the enemy, they have to be defeated in this spin-off, surely by the end of the first series. And then you lessen their impact when they come into the main show.
Yeah, I don't know how you... Yeah. I think I would leave a Dalek spin-off until later, for sure.
An Ace spin-off series. A lot of people have been saying that. A Prydonian Academy spin-off where the students learn of the many Time Lords and Ladies that came before them. A Georgia Tennant spin-off as Jenny, which is actually something that I've penciled in for one of my pitches for the when we come around to doing things. This is a great one from Jason. Honestly, I'd love a spin-off about people displaced by weeping angels.
Oh, that's a good one.
That is a really cool idea.
That's a good one. That'd be like Quantum Leap, but...
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's cool. I like
people
that.
People sort of... Every single episode is somebody else adjusting to being in a different place and time.
I can imagine that.
Ellie has said, Benny's Bonanza Adventures and Friends.
Benny is in Bernie Summerfield.
No, as in...
Oh, Benny. Oh, God, yeah.
Benny being ripped to shreds by a dreg. Great name for a monster, actually, now I think about it going back.
The dregs were cool.
The dregs were cool.
They were cool
looking.
And they were good monsters, yeah.
Dre says, Kenny from School Reunion fighting monsters. Sure, let's go for it. Why not?
Wow, that is a deep cut as well.
And finally from Peter, the Dalekian, the cookbook of Riversong. We can only hope that those things will happen.
They should do... I can't say anything because, you know, that's for next time.
Why
can't...
you're going to keep everything under
your hat. I've got some ideas. They're brewing.
Cooking away.
Yeah.
Well, you can find out about those in the next episode of The Review of Death. It's an incredibly exciting time because it's like the way that they've sort of faux announced this through Shooty's Instagram... is sort of, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They know they're planting the seeds of things to come. So we just have to sort of wait and see what happens.
Yeah.
But I feel like there is some big stuff on the way. Some stuff that's probably been bubbling under the surface for a little while. We don't know where this money has suddenly come from for the Doctor Who animated reconstructions.
No.
That could form part of the Whoniverse. I mean, it would be very easy just to stick whatever logo or sting they go for at the front of that.
It was funny, I was watching the season 2 box set the other day and obviously it's got the old Jodie logo thing that they did, which seems so weird now.
Cause it seems out of place though.
Yeah, because it felt like it was meant to be a bold statement for bigger and better things that didn't really happen.
When did it get used? It got used when it got announced.
Yeah.
It got used on the box sets.
Yeah.
Maybe it appeared at one of the press screenings.
Maybe.
And that was it.
Yeah.
They had a whole thing composed by a completely different
guy
to whoever did the main theme. You know, it was like a totally separate thing.
Yeah.
How weird is that?
It's really bizarre. I'd love to know what that was all about.
Oh, we'll find out one day.
Yeah.
We'll find out. Well, I mean, Chris Chibnall is going to Galley 1.
I saw that.
Does he have a death wish?
Well, yeah, I think so.
I mean, you know... You know, God bless him.
But who knows? Who knows what sort of stuff he might say now? Because he's not on the BBC payroll anymore. Yeah. He might be like, oh yeah, this happened.
But whatever he says there is going to be a quarter of what eventually comes out of, you know, various books and articles and interviews.
Some
in
bloke
the future.
Stand in the pub going, I worked on Doctor Who.
And it was
fucking nightmare.
I was promised millions by the Chinese government and it didn't happen. So, I mean, the Hooniverse is ever expanding. And that is a very exciting prospect for all of us. Speaking of an expanded Hooniverse, I wonder how long these are going to be going for. Doctor Who, The War Doctor begins. He Who Fights With Monsters is available for you all to win. If you watch the rest of this video, you'll get the question.
Yeah.
You'll find out how to enter. It's really just an opportunity for you guys to enjoy listening to Johnny talking about an era of Doctor Who that he actually likes.
Yeah.
Bloody hell, can you imagine that?
I know, bonkers.
So we'll see you in this setup in a fortnight's time, but enjoy the rest of this episode.
Well, no, not bye-bye. See you in a
minute. No, see you in a minute, yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hello, and welcome back to The Review of Death, your fortnightly home for Doctor Who news and reviews. I'm Matthew Toffolo. I'm joined as ever by Billy Garrett John, and I'm also joined by Jonathan Toffolo, big brother, and the one that we always wheel out when we do a Sylvester McCoy story. We're talking about Paradise Towers, so that's why he's here.
Hey, there we go.
So, welcome, gentlemen.
Hello.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Before we start, we've got a giveaway.
No.
Yes.
No.
Thanks to the very kind people at Big Finish who accidentally sent me two copies of the same box set, we've got a copy of The War Doctor Begins, He Who Fights With Monsters.
See, if that was me, I would not have said the second half of that. I would have said, courtesy of Big Finish.
I know, but I thought it made it more amusing to say that...
It would have added a bit of mystique to think that they might be on our side.
Yeah, yeah. No one's on our side.
That's true.
We discussed this the other day.
That is true.
No one's on our side. Yes, so starring Jonathan Carley, who does a tremendous job as John Hurt. Hopefully he's listening to this podcast right now. Who knows?
Hello, Jonathan.
Hello, yes. I'm here. Sorry.
So we have this to give away. And how are we giving this away?
Well, I came up with a question that made a bit more sense. Johnny had a couple of ideas about questions that we could ask.
Yeah.
Do you want to run them past the viewers,
well,
Johnny,
and then
we'll go for the real
questions.
One?
I have one which is not Doctor Who related, which was, can you guess how many pupils I teach currently this academic year?
Yeah.
And my other one was, can you guess how many ties I've currently purchased in trying to get a most accurate season 26 tie?
So the real question is, what colour Kangs honour the unalive yellow Kang with a special ceremony? And you can email us at thereviewofdeath@gmail.com. Just put Big Finish CD as the subject and the answer in your thing and an address that we can send it to, and we'll randomly select one.
Or alternatively, feel free to answer my questions and put them in the comments underneath in the
video.
If
you can answer all three and you get them all right, I'll give you everything that I haven't been able to sell on eBay between now and me leaving and going to New Zealand.
My God.
What are we talking about today, Matthew?
We're talking about Paradise Towers. Is there any news or anything that we need to mention?
Well, there's a big slug that's sucking people off in Doctor Who location filming.
That's going on in Newport, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that kind of thing happens in Newport.
What are we talking about? Mm. Of course there's news.
What's that?
Jenna Graves is back as Kate Stewart.
Yeah, but you have to be the least interested person in the world to say that.
Like, I know.
After what you said about her in Power of the Doctor.
I know, but I'm just trying to add a bit of pizzazz
bit
to this
of
thing.
Way. Well, I mean, Doctor Who might be filming in Bristol this week that we're recording, so that may have already, well, it would have already happened, maybe or maybe not.
Yeah, by the time this goes out, it may have happened. But yeah, she's coming back, unit's coming back. Mm. I mean, new unit, we're going to be in the 60th anyway, because we've seen them in the trailer. And
we saw that helicopter shot of the helipad on the Bad Wolves outside the studios. And there's also this
sorry, am I right on you? I'm sorry.
That's
I'm
right.
not used to you
mean,
being
I'm
here.
I'm not that big.
And so I'm just
there's usually a gulf.
What is going on?
That's about a Matthew size between us.
Sorry.
That's all right.
There's this Roger App Williams fella.
Yeah.
So who's he then?
Well, we don't know, Jonathan, at this stage.
Okay. You have to ask Russell T Davies.
Oh, right.
I'll get him on the blur and I'll ask him.
Yeah.
App.
You didn't reply to my message on Instagram.
No, he didn't. I'm not surprised. App meaning son of. So Roger, son of Williams.
Williams.
Fucking hell. We'll get there eventually. And there seems to be some kind of alt-right years and years type deal going on.
Yeah.
There,
oh, yeah.
Which is exciting, so,
ultra-conservative bastard.
Let's burn them.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Now we're past calling for people's executions. Mm. Let's get on to Paradise Towers.
Whew. Mm. It feels like this is a story that we've been saying we all do for
about
long
like, time.
Last 14 years.
I think it's basically...
Actually, have we known each other that long?
No, about nine.
Okay. For the last 9 years.
Ever since I said I quite like it and Matt went, no, you don't. We've wanted to do this video.
Yeah.
And obviously we brought Johnny in because you would have been watching it on initial broadcast.
I watched it at 87. Mm-hmm. So I was 4.
Yeah.
I mean, I do remember seeing it.
Yeah.
But I said to Matt, I don't remember this one as vividly as I remember Time and the Rani or Dragonfire.
Sure.
Wonder why.
And also Delta. Wonder why. Yeah. as we'll see. But I do remember watching it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just don't have, you know, standout moments.
No.
For obvious reasons.
Well, let's have a look here and see if you remember any of this. Do you remember the box office number one at the time, Jonathan?
What, at 4 years of age?
At 4 years of age.
I don't know.
Smack my bitch up.
Yeah.
No, box office. But Beverly Hills Cop 2 was number one, as well as The Untouchables. This year would also see the releases of The Fly.
Oh nice.
Great film. Yeah.
Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah.
Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
Good film.
Platoon.
Right, yeah.
Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
Yeah, okay.
That's a little plug for your podcast. Yes. Superman IV, The Quest for Peace.
Oh, dear.
It's a bad one, isn't it?
Filmed in Milton Keynes.
And The Living Daylights.
Oh, very good.
Which was the second highest grossing film in the UK that year. Crocodile Dundee was number one.
Wow.
Number one in the charts was Pump Up the Volume by Mars. I can't imagine at 4 years old you're in the clubs off your face.
I don't think so. Unlikely.
Yeah.
But obviously,
or since, yeah.
The most important thing that happened was that literally days before this episode went out, IKEA opened their first store in the UK.
Did they?
How about that?
87.
I don't know, the same Milton Keynes, why not? Let's just go for Milton Keynes as a random place.
It's
a bastion of culture. I remember, I have very strong kind of nostalgic memories towards this. This was one
when did
of,
you first see this, Billy, do you think?
I would have been probably about 4 or 5
oh, same
or
age as
six
me,
years
roughly.
Old.
Yeah.
And my mum and I, it was one of the two VHSs that we would regularly take out of the library in Bedminster, and it was this and Dragonfire with the two.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a certain affinity for season 24. And but it was funny watching this because I've watched it so many times since, obviously, and I can't really connect the dots between like memories in my head of having watched it. The only bits I really remember is the pool.
Yeah.
But I think that might have been because
it was on the cover, isn't it?
VHS cover.
Yeah. What about you, Matt?
Yeah, go on, Matt.
I remember us having it taped off of probably UK Gold.
Yeah, we did.
And that's really about it.
How old do you think you were when you first saw it?
Oh, little.
Titchy.
Yeah.
Titchy, yeah.
Mm. And from then until now, I guess you've always hated it.
Well,
because that was always the dynamic.
Yeah.
That was always the case. Mm. I loathed it with a passion. Mm. Probably my least favourite Doctor Who story.
And now,
well, we watched it when the box set came out, season 24 set.
Yeah.
We watched the extended version.
I was going to mention that.
And we watched it and we laughed at it and we thought, actually, we quite enjoyed watching this. This was quite fun. And then, of course, we watched it the other night.
Again. And we watched it all the way through.
Yeah.
I said, let's just watch 2 episodes and then we'd come back to it the following evening, maybe. But we didn't. We sandwiched the whole lot in one go.
Wow. I did the same as well. I didn't expect to be able to do that.
Very enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I've enjoyed it now more in my latter years than when I was young.
Sure.
I think because when you're younger, you sort of try and take it a bit more seriously and you're like, this is shit.
Yes.
And I think when you're older, you can say, this is shit, but, you know, they're all having fun.
Yeah, they are. They're having a good old time, aren't they?
I think that season, it is Doctor Who does Panto.
Yeah.
It is. But it's a weird sort of stepping stone in that it's sort of getting into more social commentary.
Yeah.
But it's also camping it up to a massive degree. I mean, we'll go through what our viewers and listeners thought later, but the word that kept coming up, if you could, you know, search one word that appeared in basically every single tweet or Instagram message, it was camp, 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 camp.
Really, yeah.
And it is, hugely. But that whole season feels that way.
Sylv, he's a bit sinister in that story in certain points. You get to see, you know, that darker side of him already. Even though there's only story 2 for him, you know, and you think he's a bit quite silly in Time in the Rani after the post-generation. But, you know, that scene when he's there in the office, when they've, you know, locked him up, or, you know, and he gets the book out, and you see manipulation, that is silly. You can sort of say, the way that the character is going already at an early stage.
And also that really good scene between him and Richard Briers, where Richard Briers is questioning him.
Is
that their final conversation?
And then it flips, and then he's sort of interrogating Briers.
That's really
very cleverly done, beautifully directed that twist.
Yeah,
very, very clever.
The first thing that stood out to me watching this, I think, was probably the production design.
Mm.
It's probably the strongest aspect of the entire story.
I mean,
obviously, you know, the setting is cool from a writing perspective, but actually seeing Paradise Towers and its corridors and its squares and its lifts and its basements and stuff, it's really nicely put together.
Yeah, and especially you've got that bridge, haven't
it's
you?
It's nice. Yeah.
Which allows for some really good shots. Yeah. The directing's really good.
Elevated sort of like levels like that don't really happen in classic Doctor Who. So when you see something like that, it immediately piques your interest.
And even if you compare it to Dragonfire, which does have a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, the big ice.
Yeah, the ice.
Yeah, yeah. It's not really that. Those levels aren't really used to the same effect.
No,
you can. You know, I'm not sure who directed this story.
No,
which is really bad.
I probably have to. Have
I was going
to
note it down and I didn't because I'm hopeless. But there's a lot of like handheld camera stuff.
Yeah.
Where you know you've got shots looking down into the square and stuff, and it's really really great.
But even like you know Okay, the pool in the sky that they end up at is not the height of luxury in terms
of
not,
is it? No, it's a disappointment, isn't it?
It's the shittest pool you could possibly go to. But they would have probably done better if they'd have gone to a swimming bath somewhere.
Probably.
Rather than some posh blue
house. Bevan's South swimming baths. Yeah. Probably. But having said that, they do such a good job with making it cramp and dank and dark that when you actually get to the pool in part three or whenever it is, it does sort of feel like a, oh, we're somewhere else at last.
Yeah.
You know, it's less claustrophobic,
yeah,
it's less
true.
Sort of enclosed.
Mm.
The cleaning robot in the pool,
Do
we think maybe should have been closer in design to the cleaners that we see? Because to me, when I was
it's
younger...
So different.
It's so
exactly.
different.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I just thought...
It just seems out of place.
There's a robot octopus.
Exactly.
Place.
Yeah. I just thought it was a monster. I didn't think it was a robot or it was a pool
for
cleaning,
cleaning
robot.
The
it
pool.
Was
yeah.
part
yeah.
of the whole ensemble.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't look like he's designed... Well, I mean, then again, I guess... Yeah, it doesn't look like he's designed to clean.
No. But neither did the other things, I don't think.
No, they got like...
They're all designed drawers. To kill.
I mean, what are you going to clean with that bloody thing? I mean,
I don't know. Put up a shelf.
True.
Put up a shelf.
Some of the barrels used for the set dressing in the Kang's lair.
Do they turn into Daleks?
Sadly not.
Special weapons Daleks.
But they do have very faded or painted over Weyland-Yutani logos on it.
Oh, really?
Because they were all borrowed from Alien.
Wow.
They're just a few examples of sort of set dressing that gets mixed through the 80s from the Alien films.
Those barrels are more famous than the cast.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Hang on, saying that, there's some good actors in that story.
There are some good actors.
Those women, those bloody cannibal lesbians, they are very good actresses.
Yeah.
They are fabulous. I think they're probably I think that's where the story peaks for me.
Mm.
It kind of hits that point where it goes, if everybody was sort of on this
level
of psychopathy, you know, I'd sort of understand it a bit more. But the fact that there are still residents that are acting like nothing is going wrong and haven't resorted to eating their neighbour, to me is a bit like, you're not really going fully ahead with the concept, you know? Either everybody needs to be like that or, you know, whatever.
I mean, I think part of the issue that I have always had with it was the Kangs, really. Mm. It's that...
They're so much older than
they
should
be. They're so much older. I mean, are they supposed to be teenagers?
Well, I think they're supposed to be like sort of, what, like 12 to 14 years old?
Yeah,
maybe
I thought
even
16, something like that.
But... See, Annie said, well, no, they're like adults, but because they've been living there in this...
Society sort of this, without
no education and stuff, they're sort of all a bit backwards.
Mm.
Well, I suppose...
Which I can buy.
They're a bit dull.
They're all a bit dull, yeah. But then the stuff that really annoys me is like the costumes. Like the costumes are... They're so designed, you know, they look like a uniform rather than... Here are a ragtag bunch of kids who have, I've got a red hoodie, I've got a red jacket, so I'm a red Kang.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, no, we've got perfectly matching outfits.
Yeah,
it's not quite
beautifully coiffed and everything.
Yeah,
and that's the trouble,
Because I think, really, at the this could have been a really good sort of Lord of the Flies, really dirty, scrappy kids.
Yeah.
And you just don't quite get that. It's got Mark Strickson's ex-wife in it as well.
That is true. I did make a note of that somewhere. I mean, they're kind of, initially, I suppose maybe when you're a kid as well, they have got that cringe factor to them as
an
ensemble.
Do. Yeah.
But then as you get through and you're like, well, if you kind of get with the vernacular and you get with the fact that they are kids from another planet and they've been brought up in this weird, you know, environment, you kind of get it a bit more, maybe.
Mm.
High fabtion, ice hot.
Yeah, I love all that, actually.
That stuff is really cool.
Yeah.
And it just adds to the world building and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But I did have a sort of query about the whole backstory to Paradise Towers. So, obviously, I mean, what's his name? I've written it down here somewhere. Croagnon.
Yeah.
Right. So he builds Paradise Towers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his MO... It was the same with Miracle City when he built it, was I don't like flesh polluting my art.
Yeah.
I don't want people living in the spaces that I've built.
Yeah.
So the parents of the Kangs drove him into the basement and somehow separated his mind from his body, rather than just killing him outright. Mm. I don't know quite how that happened.
Yeah.
Somehow his mind has been sustained in what?
What two is neon
that?
Lights.
Yeah. I was going to say, so what is that thing supposed to be? Is it just that it was supposed to be a big monster that wasn't quite realised?
Matt had a really
camera?
Good idea.
Go on.
Yeah, we'll get onto that a bit later.
Okay. But, okay.
I think if you look at the behind the scenes pictures, it is more like a computer or a machine.
Oh, is it?
But okay. There's lots of smoke in the episode. You can't see bugger all, you just see these bloody neon lights.
I thought they
were.
Yeah. That was very good. I always thought they were supposed to be his eyes.
Yeah.
Like glaring out of the darkness.
I think they are supposed to be like eyes, aren't they?
But it's like, so how is this man's life essence being sustained in these two fluorescent neon lights? Mm. I don't, you know, there's a disconnect between what the script is implying or getting across and what they've actually been able to afford, which doesn't actually stretch to the rest of the story because the cleaners, they're a couple of hundred quid off of being perfect. Mm. They're pretty good for what they are. Apart from the fact they can get knocked out by a blanket in a crossbow bolt. Apart from that, you know, everything is sort of set up to be great. And there's a couple of things that it really nails.
Mm.
But then there's a few things like this entity in the basement that it doesn't quite get right. But I can only assume that's a budgetary thing. So I can't hold it against it too much. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I've read the novelization of this and I quite enjoyed it. But I can't recall that it went into any particular detail about that. And you think that would be something that, okay, I've got a novel, I can go in.
Go,
you
know,
you could have had a chapter about
the uprising to get rid of him,
But here.
Mm.
You know.
So a bit of a mystery.
Let's, you know, I'd love to know what the intention was for what that was supposed to be in the basement.
Yeah.
It's the only thing that sort of disconnects it. For me, personally, but there we go.
I mean, maybe they thought, maybe there was dialogue in the script, and then whilst they were filming it, they thought, Christ, at this rate, if Richard Briers tries to get this bit of exposition out, we're going to be here till next week, so we've just cut this.
Mm. Do you want to talk about
Richard Briers?
Yeah.
Because up until the point where he becomes Karagnon,
he's good.
Great.
I think he's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And there's absolutely no reason why anybody up until that point should say that he's miscast or bad in this
story. No, he's really
totally
good.
Agree.
Yeah.
And then he becomes Karagnon. Mm.
Yeah.
And then you're like,
the word overact comes to mind.
Yeah, the word sucking the scenery comes to mind. Because I read that apparently he was kind of doing what he thought was the right thing to do. And JNT was giving him evils across the studio floor.
To ham it up.
Yeah, but it's like, what do you expect him to do?
Mm.
You know, with the dialogue you're giving him, what have I got written down here? You and I will now destroy him. It's like, well, like, what is he supposed to do with that? Obviously, he's going to act like a dick. Like, you know, it's just part of what's written on the paper.
Yeah. Now, we've got an extra person reviewing this episode tonight.
Oh, yeah.
As well as Jonathan.
Oh, yeah.
Because we watched this with our mother.
Magnificent.
And every time she had a comment, I noted it down in my notes. So this is what she had to say.
Now, I think we ought to put this into context first.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously Annie and I were watching it properly.
And Gizmo.
But what
did Gizmo think? Gizmo enjoy it?
No, you fell asleep.
Oh, okay.
But Mum was doing a puzzler, wasn't she? At the same.
So I don't think that's really.
No, but I think they need to know because she wasn't watching it, you know, avidly. She was like this, and occasionally she'd hear a line, and her ears would prick up, and I'll give you a little comment. So I think they need to know that. Anyway,
so she wasn't paying attention. Fox is basically.
But there were some good.
Because if she
lines.
Had been paying attention, gosh, she would have been hooked to it.
Like, I'm sure she would have been riveted to the screen.
Well, so, she did say that she preferred it to some of the other ones she's seen recently.
Yeah, because she's been watching a lot with the kids.
Yeah,
and she said, I put it here.
This one wasn't as shit as the last one.
Yeah. It's all right. I've seen worse. That was her overall comment.
Stay that on the DVD cover.
This is what she had to say about Richard Briers, which was, so she went, who is he supposed to be? Hitler?
She's hit the nail on the head.
And then when Richard Briers was talking to Cragnon in the basement, she watched it.
She looked up.
Yeah, she looked up, watched it, and then turned to us and said, "Isn't it pathetic?"
That's a pretty good approximation of Paradise Towers. Yeah. Between those two comments, I think we've got a decent...
There's some other good ones as well, though.
Then once he finally became Cragnon and he gave arguably the best performance of his entire career, Mum said, what is he? Drugged up?
Well, I think this is the problem with him. What is that makeup job supposed to be? Because he comes out of it sort of looking part cyber converted.
Yeah, yeah. Glittery, isn't it?
Silver.
Silver.
Yeah.
But if they'd really gone to town on him and basically gone, okay, Richard, you are a dead body that is rotting as it's standing, but you've got the personality.
But your moustache has grown wider.
Your moustache has got wider, but we'll go.
You've become less like Hitler,
which is weird because you want to kill everybody. But you have to stomp around with this other person's personality inside of you, but you're rotting, right? They could have done something really cool with his makeup. Well, they could have made him really pale and put red things under his eyes, and he would have looked a bit.
So I had a different idea.
Matt's got I think this is where they missed a trick here. This is really good, I think.
Because the whole thing is the cleaners are going around snatching people.
Yeah.
Feeding Cro-Agnon.
Yeah.
And I didn't really understand this. Like, well, why would this machine
need to eat people? Yeah.
And I said, what they should have done is, they should have done it like Frankenstein. Mm. And he should have been using the bits and pieces of all the bodies
to build himself
a new body. Yeah. And used Richard Briers' head as like the final piece. Mm. And then when he has the thing come down on him, you know, his spirit transfers or whatever. Yeah. And then at the end you have more of a Frankenstein's monster. Bit of a Kang, bit of a
Rezzy's leg with a slipper on.
That's
and it would have been a bit silly, but it would have been...
It would have made more sense, I think.
It would have made more sense. Yeah. It would have been slightly macabre, but it would have been, you know.
Do I frighten you?
It's all a bit OTT.
One boob about... on one side.
And a heel on one leg. It's like, it's fine until it gets to that point. And then you just think, oh God, Richard. And you've got to think of the people in the gallery going, what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah.
Up until that point, I'm sure everybody was enjoying themselves.
I could be working on EastEnders now. Mm. I turned EastEnders down. Yeah.
Literally.
Mum said, overall, she said, oh, wonderful. And Richard Briers needs a standing ovation.
I mean, to have stayed in the studio for that length of time to finish it, he probably does need a standing ovation, to be fair.
Just interrupt you.
Go on, Johnny.
But he took it very seriously, though, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think he said, I had no intention of overplaying sending it up.
No. Yeah. I mean, he read what was in front of him.
Yeah,
and he did what he was told to do.
You know.
It's JNT's fault for not stepping in himself.
Yeah.
He can give him daggers.
The director could have said, well, look, come on.
But that's
fine. Richard,
but the director was obviously happy with what he was doing. Mm. So if John had an issue with it, he should have talked to him in the studio and gone, I think you're taking the piss, mate.
Yeah.
But he didn't. Yeah. And so it's not Richard Briers' fault.
No.
You know, but I can understand that this story kind of goes down in people's estimations as a result
that
of this
doesn't
performance.
Help with that. Yeah.
But beyond Richard Briers, who is fabulous until the Cragnon bit, and then it becomes, panto, but that's fine as well. Tilda and Tabby, of course, are fantastic.
Yeah.
And they are they're so grim.
Yeah.
My only sort of, not quibble with them, but the only note I would have given is I kind of feel like the cannibal bit is overplayed slightly.
Oh, do you think?
In the early going.
Oh, really?
Because, we've got that shot. I don't know what it was like for you, Johnny, when you watched it first. But I was kind of, there's that first shot of the dinner table where, you get the suspicion that something's wrong because there's bones on the, but I was sort of thinking maybe on a tiny monitor screen in the corner of the room, you wouldn't have noticed.
I'll just tell you, I didn't realise there was anything when I first watched it when I was a kid. I was only four, but I didn't realise anything was up until they put the bloody net over Mel and the picture. And I thought, oh, crikey, what's happened to these two nice old ladies? It wasn't until much later on I watched it again, I realised the cannibal thing. I didn't think I would have realised that anyway. I was too small. I was too young.
But that's good to hear.
I mean, watching it, I thought that the little clues are subtle enough. I thought anyway.
I don't know.
The bones, like, you know, unless it had a human skull in it, well, you don't necessarily know that that's...
But the thing is, human... They're kind of overplaying it slightly as well. I mean, I don't know which one it is in the blue, if it's Tilda or Tabby, but she's basically licking her lips at Mel.
Yeah.
I mean, that might also be because she fancies her. Mm. But she's basically, you know, going... You know, the whole time that she's in the flat.
Yeah. Mm.
And I just kind of felt like that cliffhanger, but obviously... Johnny, at the time, you didn't know.
No.
So that cliffhanger would have had the effect of...
It would.
Oh my God, they're trying to eat her.
It's a good cliffhanger.
It is a great cliffhanger.
I like that cliffhanger.
That's great, because it kind of dismisses the point I'd made here where it's a bit too obvious and that cliffhanger would have hit home more. But then I've watched this story a dozen times.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not going to have the same effect on me. But it's good to hear that it did on you.
I guess
that goes to prove that it can do it. You know?
I've noted here that the budgie... that's in their flat is probably the best actor in this episode.
But I mean, considering the fact you can't see it, that's quite high praise.
Did you want to eat one of those cookies?
Oh,
those
cakes? They're so good. I always wanted to eat one of those cookies.
I wanted to eat one of those cookies, but what is she doing with that crumpet? Stick it in a toaster.
Yeah.
This is space year 2197. Why are you putting it over
that lovely cream on the top of it as well?
I know, just keep spooning that.
Oh, it's fantastic, yeah.
I mean, Mel, we should probably talk about Mel in a bit, but she absolutely walks into that. And, she kind of deserves it for walking into a stranger's flat like that and thinking, I mean, come on, they clearly want to eat you.
What are you doing?
Why did you come back?
Do
you know what? Yeah, actually, those cookies were so good.
I mean, she did stuff her face.
Yeah.
She did, yeah.
Oh, hang on a minute. One last thing about the Tilda and Tabby.
Tilda and Tabby.
Are they lesbians? Are they married? And do they only eat women because they're lesbians?
Now, I'll tell you what I thought. I had no idea they were supposed to be lesbians.
Mm.
This was a shock to me. I'm shocked. I had no idea. And then suddenly, they're lesbians. Are they? Why? Just because they live together. Why can't they be two nice old dears who happen to be cannibals that live together?
They came together over there.
Yeah, over their mutual shared love of
mutual
flesh.
Human flesh.
Each other's.
And muff. That's why they're bound together for life. I was watching it today and I was
Muff
like...
Muff and Mel, I'm going to get that on a t-shirt, please. I only eat two things, Muff and Mel.
All right. Damn. I was watching it today and I thought, all right, I'm going to look at the text. I had the subtitles on. Mm. Is there anything in here that I can equate to them being gay?
Mm.
And I couldn't find anything overt in the text.
I didn't think so.
So is this just a case of people shipping it for decades... that it's just become part of the fabric of Doctor Who fandom that Tilda and Tabby are, you know.
Yeah. I guess you wouldn't want another cannibal going down on you because...
okay.
Not for listening, are you? You can't put that on this video.
We don't watch the reviews on the internet, Johnny,
really?
Believe me.
His mum watches this.
I didn't say it, it's all right. I will say, after they get eaten by the garbage disposal unit, which is a funny bit, but I always thought, how has a cleaner got up into that little...
Because
it is a cleaner's arm.
Yeah, it's supposed
it's
to
like,
be.
Okay,
yeah.
So what's that
It's
going?
Not a great ending. Like,
no.
For
no.
Them, really.
No, it's
That's
not.
That's a bit disappointing. I'd like something a bit more, I don't know.
I can't remember if it's Tilda or Tabby that gets eaten second.
Yeah.
But it's just a shot of them getting strangled from behind.
Yeah.
And then you cut back to Mel and Pex comes over hear them screaming in the distance and that's it.
And, that's what, yeah.
And it's like, well, a little bit more would have been nice to sell it. Yeah. But if you haven't got the time or the resources.
No.
I also kind of understand that.
Russell's Doctor Who, that little bin would have gone
and
we would have saluted it. Nice scene between the chief caretaker and Maddie, who is an interesting character. Yeah. She's a resi that apparently isn't eating people or Muff, I don't know.
She loves Syl. Have you seen that? That is weird. What is all that about?
It's a scene where they give each other the eyes.
It's creepy. God, it's awful.
No wonder they cut it.
Yeah, no wonder it's terrible.
Cool, don't tell Onslow.
No, I know. He's dead now, unfortunately.
Yeah. Obviously, she's probably dead now, isn't she?
I'm not sure, possibly.
Mm. But there's a nice bit anyway where the chief caretaker and Maddie have a chat. And he's basically like, you know, if you're quiet about this, you can stay here.
Mm.
And it's like, it adds to that layer of seediness in this place that people are just out for themselves.
Mm.
And nobody ever leaves their apartment.
And
all that sort of stuff. It just... you know, the thing I would say about this, in defence of anybody who thinks this is rubbish just from the outset and, you know, would never think about giving it a second go, is that, sure, it's silly and campy on the surface, but if you want to, you know, have a go at it, there are layers to it, and there's a lot in there to sort of take out.
Yeah.
And that's just one example. Is that, that scene could have very easily been cut.
Yeah.
Really, because it doesn't help Maddie's case where she becomes a goodie in the end.
And I think, you know? I think this is the thing, isn't it? This, like you said, it's all in the script. And I think this is a story where the script could have been interpreted in several ways. The way that it ultimately was, which was over the top, tongue-in-cheek, pantomime-y, it could have gone much darker and
probably
much more sinister, and you know, the old deers didn't need to be nice like old deers. They could have been more creepy. I mean, obviously it wouldn't have worked so much because Mel would have immediately have gone somewhat up here. But
I don't know how she didn't with the state of play as it is at the moment. Yeah. Like, how did she not find that slightly suspicious? But
yeah, I think on a script level, there's not really an issue there.
I feel like visually, in terms of the production design, again, which I think is probably the strongest part of this, it's going for that dark, grungy, realist sort of thing. But then in some of the performances and in some of the costumes, it is going for
Panto. There's a contrast, isn't there? There's a conflict of interests between the two, I think.
Ever so slightly, what other notes did I have? I think I had some
We said something about Mel, didn't we? We talked about Mel being very theatrical in this story.
Yeah, like...
when you have Bonnie Langford?
I mean, this is we've said this.
I like Bonnie, but
in all of her stories, I
think... But excellent scream, end of part three when she... Was the three? End of part two. She gets, you know, the pitchfork thing.
And
beautifully
time.
Links into the theme.
Do you reckon she was...
It's good.
I'm sure she was told during her audition she had to scream in the key
very good. Very impressive.
They changed the key between Trial of a Time Lord and
Did they? Just
so
for
her.
Wow. Yeah. No, I thought she did that very well. But she's a bit theatrical. She's a bit like, you know, that sort of thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know.
You know, even someone like Pex, who is, you know, he's slightly over the top because the story's over the top. But even he is slightly more...
Subdued in
the way
he...
Yeah,
but do you think that's because he's got a little bit of grime on him and he's a bit torn, and then Mel comes into this and you're like... Who's this fucking theatre bunny that's just wandered in? And she's like pristine and she holds herself really well.
Yeah.
And I think this is the point where if I was script editor or producer of this programme, I would have seen her running about with all those characters and thought, anyone else is more interesting in the TARDIS than you. Because, you know, like Ace obviously comes along in Dragonfire and she's got an edge to her.
Yeah.
And all the companions have a slight edge, but Mel has got nothing to her.
I could easily see the Doctor not having a companion in this story and then picking up a Kang and taking a Kang with
him. For sure.
And being like an ace.
Because, absolutely.
You know, there's not, not masses of difference. You know, same with Ray, isn't it? Because Ray was in the running.
Didn't Mel have a funny comment about Mel?
There was a comment, I can't remember who it was about, but Mum went, "Oh, I like her eye makeup."
I think it was Mel.
Yeah.
I think it was Mel.
I just, watching this, she's the only sort of outlier in terms of performance. I know everybody else is camping it up and everybody else is being super panto, but for Bonnie Langford to still be sort of pulling ahead of everybody else in that way, I mean... There is a revisionist thing of Doctor Who companions going, when you kind of go back and you go, oh no, yeah, no, that was great, and that was great, and that was great, and altogether a fantastic companion. I've never really seen anybody do that for Mel. And it's when you watch stories like Paradise Towers, where it's separate from the whole Trial of a Time Lord saga, and it's, you know, sort of outside of her meeting the Seventh Doctor and then leaving.
Yeah.
You really only have two stories to see her isolated as a companion within her own right.
Yeah.
And there's nothing there.
Yeah, and I think especially when you compare her from telly and then listen to her Big Finish stories, because, I mean, obviously she's had a fantastic turn in EastEnders, hasn't she, recently?
Yeah, I mean, but Langford's a fantastic
And she's a very good actress.
Actress.
She was brilliant in it for the bits that I saw. And then, yeah, like you compare the two styles, her Doctor Who audio acting to telly. And, yeah, on audio, she feels like, okay, this is a normal person talking and blah, 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 blah. Compared to, Oh, gosh, doctor, what's this? Mm. Oh, I really hope we get to da 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 da. Come on, let's go. Da, da. Yeah, and it is. It's like, it's the knee slapping thing, but, you know.
But she's in a children's TV series.
And I think that's it. As far as she was concerned, it was a children's TV show.
And now she's making audios for neckbeards. So she tries to bring her acting down to a slightly more mature level. Yeah. And I can understand that.
Yeah.
But also, you know, that doesn't make it palatable to watch sort of now.
Yeah.
Like, she is the most sort of, okay, she'll get the piss taken out of her on Harry Hill's TV burp.
Yeah.
Out of all the companions.
And then Richard Bryars turns up at the end and they're like, oh! Oh! And then Bonnie's like, gosh, and I thought I was...
Good Jesus.
Yeah. I don't think it's just a different style of acting, isn't it? It's not even so much overacting. Mm. It's just...
Well, theatrical acting,
she is
isn't
acting
it? Stage acting.
Yeah, she's doing stage acting and they're doing
that's
TV acting.
That's what she's doing.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. That's a fair enough thing to say. Yeah, I mean, overall, though, that this story, it has these layers that you can go down into, but I can also understand that there might be people that have a certain barrier they have to get over for Doctor Who. Be that Mel. Well, you know, to be fair, of all the companions, if I was like, well, you know, I want to watch a good, strong companion-related story, there's nothing to be found with Mel.
Yeah.
Do you want something with a little bit of intrigue? It's there sort of beneath the surface. Do you want something with some really great cliffhangers? You know, I mean, part three, even with Sylve pulling all those faces, getting strangled, he gives John Pertwee a run for his money.
I thought the same thing.
With those gurning faces. Mm-hmm. You know, but there is stuff there. And I just think you need to be in the right headspace to accept it.
Yeah.
You know, you can't go into it cynically.
It's one of those, you have to be in the mood for it.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of Doctor Who stories where...
I feel like that.
I've watched stories that I love and I've not really been in the mood for it and I've not enjoyed it as much. And then, you know, the opposite. If it's a story that I don't particularly like, I've sat down and watched it and gone, actually, I've really enjoyed that. Mm. And, you know, it's happened with this story both times we've watched it recently. Mm. And I did sort of think to myself, coming into it this second time, I sort of thought,
I probably won't enjoy it.
I probably won't enjoy it so much. But I still did. And I think it's probably just that thing of I am now older and I can sort of think to myself, I don't need to take this quite so seriously.
And the volume helped.
And the volume helped.
That probably would have helped quite a bit. Johnny, what do you make of the bamboo brolly? Can we have
a
30-minute essay on that?
Yeah, exposition on the bamboo brolly. So the bamboo brolly, we see only in this story, obviously, of course. Mm-hmm. No brolly in Time of the Rani. And obviously in the next story, Delta, we have the question mark umbrella, which is
hanging up
first
there.
Scene. I assume it's just in the interim whilst it's being created, I imagine.
Mm, by the TARDIS. It pops out of a thing on the console at the Sonic.
Out, and then there we go. But nice little prop.
Is it the same body?
Or? Yeah, I was thinking this.
I don't know if it's the... I would imagine it's the same... I would imagine it was the same body from the brolly shop. Yeah. the brolly maker shop, yeah.
And am I right in thinking that... Was it Robert Harrop that did the Sontarans and stuff for the new
series? Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he designed the question mark brolly.
Wow.
And he did lots of stuff for the McCoy era.
Wow.
Like the Candyman and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I mean...
So he cut his teeth on Sills' Doctor Who and then ended up working on Jodie's Doctor
and
Who.
And that is the thing, I think, that even if the stories or the performances or whatever aren't your cup of tea with the Seventh Doctor era, you can really appreciate the production design. Mm. Because I know, you know, the whole thing has always been Doctor Who's been made on a shoestring budget, but there's something about season 24 and season 25 and 26 where you think, have they found out a way to sort of put money in the right places?
Yeah.
Because you get the Destroyer.
And
you get,
fantastic.
You know, the sort of, you know...
The tech traps, really,
Michael Bay-esque, you know, Remembrance of the Daleks, explosions and all the new Dalek props and stuff.
Yeah.
You think, so there must have been some kind of a cash injection to keep this thing going. And it's used well on screen, you know, obviously. And like, you know, the way that Paradise Towers is laid out and the production design for it, it's really the best part of the whole story. You know, there's the setup for Paradise Towers, the backstory, but the actual way that the thing looks and feels sells it enough for me to kind of ignore all the rest of the stuff that happens around it and and Mel.
Mm. No, yeah. I agree. And I think reiterating what you said, I think Silv's very good in it.
Yeah, I think Silv's, yeah. He's found his feet, I think, quite early.
Quite early on. Yeah. You know, I like the stuff where he doffs his hat to the whatever the metal thing is.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
All that business, yeah. Pointing with his brolly at things. He's just, there's so much he does. He's so expressive with himself. He's not boring to watch.
And I think the other MVP of this story is Kef McCulloch.
Oh, yeah.
I love, you're not such a fan of his score on this.
I commend him for the fact that I found out he had a week to do this.
Yes, he did.
But... Da 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 da. I mean, when you hear it the fourth time,
it
gets a bit laboured.
Fair enough. I will accept that. But I think there's some good bits.
Like, there's some good bits.
The whole bit with the with the rule book.
Yeah.
That like little Muzak version of
the theme. The theme.
This one is running through a corridor and they play.
Yeah, you hear it then. It's good.
Is it just if it has the Doctor Who theme in it? It gets five stars from me.
Yeah.
Well, we all said it, didn't we?
We did.
You, me, and Annie all went, it's nice when they use the Doctor Who theme.
So. Shame they can't do it anymore.
Honestly,
I mean.
It's just such a shame.
I wonder if that's been sorted out. I think there's been a lot of.
It's insanity.
I think there's been a lot of let's see where the rights are with that and let's try and get them back.
I think now that Russell's come in and has really sort of stretched his arms out and said, right. Let's put all our eggs back into one basket.
Yeah.
And let's see, you know, it should be all under one umbrella.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
Not all, will they? Because that's all a load of pain in the arse.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully they'll get the rights back for the TV movie and we might be able to see 1996 Paul McGann on things again. Rather
let's
than
see.
That same Night of the Doctor picture. Oh, well, now they've got Power of the Doctor, Buzzcock.
I would have brought a big Finnish artist down and said, just ask him to do anything for you. So you've got 900 different angles of the same thing and you can keep using it for big Finnish covers.
Every facial expression possible.
Can you do half an orgasm? You might be able to use that for me. Let's see what the viewers and listeners thought of this episode. Okay. I'll start off. Andy. It feels like it's a clash of tones that don't really work. The storyline and setting suggest a grim, dark tale, but it's played like a camp, silly kids TV show that should have aired at 4 p.m. rather than 7:30. Wasted potential.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I do agree.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think now I'm old enough to just go, fine.
Yeah.
This is what it is. You know.
Kind of brush it off a bit more, don't
you? Yeah. I mean, I'm entertained watching it. Unlike watching The Space Pirates, where I want to die, or Underworld, where...
It's just boring.
It's just so boring that I'm just like, ugh. You know, Underworld is just unpleasant to look at. Mm.
Galaxy 4.
Or Galaxy 4, which is so boring.
Yeah. But would you have put this up at that level before this?
I wouldn't have done
it. No, Johnny wouldn't have, of course. No. You sort of... I always thought viewed
I reckon
it
Matt
in that
would have
way.
Done.
Oh yeah, I would have put it right down there.
Yeah.
I would have said it was right down the bottom with those lot. Mm-hmm. But actually now I think, honestly, there's worse things.
Mm.
Chlamydia. Go on, what have you got on your first one?
Ben says, not my favourite. I find that the tone of the script feels different to the tone of the actual episode. I feel the script wanted this story to be more mysterious. When filming it, they decided to make it much more of a pantomime.
Mm-hmm.
Which is sort of what we said in places. Mm.
Johnny?
Anyone on here?
First one.
Phil. Phil says, excuse me. He says, never a particular fave of mine, but the extended edit on the Blu-ray makes a huge difference, adding lots of detail.
Mm.
It's so unusual. Camp, dark, silly, and unlike any other story. But then that's exactly what season 24 does. You can almost hear the gear shifting as the show changes direction.
I haven't watched that full edit.
It's good. It's good. Mm. And I know you were talking about the Kef McCulloch music and how, you know, it's not great in parts. Have you heard the original score?
No, but I would really like to.
It's on the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
You can listen to it. It is like shitting in someone's ears. It is so bad. It is appalling.
Yeah, it's not good.
I'd love to give it a go.
It is just like, someone has got a Casio keyboard.
Yeah.
Doesn't know how to play the piano and it's just like...
Making little noise.
Nah, nah, nah.
meh.
Oh, no, and you're really? Like, oh, it sounds like something off an Atari 2600. It's oh, so dear. Bad. It's
I will have
appalling.
To give it a go at some point.
Yeah.
James... I mean, we couldn't watch the whole episode.
No, because I think episode one has the full score. And we watched so much of it.
Oh,
and I was just
no.
like,
that's enough now.
And it just feels empty.
Yeah.
It's just really, I mean, no wonder they sacked him.
Yeah.
I mean, to have done it so close to, yeah. like, the fact that you only gave your actual writer a week to do it.
It must be a producer's and a director's worst nightmare
oh,
to be
word.
Like, okay, this guy is off doing his own thing. Okay, right, it'll come in and it'll be fine. And then hearing that, oh my God. This isn't even just like, oh, it needs a bit of work. This is totally unusable.
It doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
Terrible.
James says, I think the high camp makes it really brilliantly nightmarish. Which is a kind of a quality.
Yeah.
It's a quality to it, especially with Tilda and Tabby, where you kind of think, actually, yeah, that is the feeling, isn't it?
Yeah.
These quite normal people are just hideously awful.
Mm. Yeah.
And it feels kind of quaint and cozy, but then there's something in it that just is slightly skewed off and slightly wrong.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite good because, you know, if you look at like serial killers and stuff in real life, you know, so many of them aren't found out because they seem so normal on the outset and they're so charismatic.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, well, that was the last person I would have thought would do something like that. Yeah. And who would you least suspect but two old lesbians living down the corridor?
Yeah, exactly.
Sarah says, top-notch fun. Top-notch fun. I love Thasmin, but those old dears are the lesbian representation we really need.
Oh, there we go. I'm still not convinced they are lesbians.
I didn't think you would be.
Right, I'll do this one. John says, I had heard only bad things about it until I got the season 24 box set. Honestly, thought it was cracking. Lots of fun, camp and scary, perfect Doctor Who. More proof that fan wisdom is to be ignored at all costs.
Oh, so stop listening to this podcast then.
Yeah.
Ian says, much like late 80s Doctor Who, a brilliant as substantial concept, a little let down by some elements of the execution. However, I rather love it. I clearly remember watching it on broadcast as an 8-year-old. Tilda, Tabby and the cleaners gave me nightmares for weeks. Mm. That's what you want to hear. Mm.
Now, they had an effect on you, didn't they, Johnny?
Did they?
Tilda and Tabby. Well, yeah, you've always had this.
I'm not a lesbian.
Oh, okay, right.
Scared of lesbians. Right. What effect did they have? About like old women?
About grandma and Auntie Bob.
Oh, yeah, I always sort of thought our grandma and auntie...
Because they always like babysat us together.
Yeah, they looked after us together. Yeah. So always, you know...
And they were always feeding us.
Yeah. Oh. So I always thought, oh, gosh, it's a bit like... Our grandmother.
But that's
great.
That is Doctor Who, isn't it? Yeah. It's like making something that seems so normal and cosy and making it the worst thing possible.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Oh, have you done one? Okay. Okay, my last one. Greg says, we'll happily go to war with the revisionists who claim this is a good story.
Oh, interesting.
Well,
interesting. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say it was a good story, but I think it's all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, would you use the good mantle to describe this story?
I mean, it's not necessarily good, but...
How many muffs out of 10 are you giving it?
I think 5, but possibly 5? A 6.
Johnny?
I give it a 6.
Yeah. I give it a 6.5.
Would you?
It's just on that cusp. It's just on that, muff of just being... that nightmarish comment where it's sort of weirdly homely, but it's also so fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, I totally get that. And I think that is what is scary about this. It's not necessarily the kind of Hitler-esque, mustache-y kind of thing, because I think that's a bit overplayed. I think that whole, you know, allegory is a bit, like, in your face.
Yeah, that's a bit daft, isn't it?
And it's like, okay, fine, he's got a Hitler mustache, but, you know, that whatever. He's a space... You know, architect. He's trying to kill.
Not only that, the uniforms as well. They look a little bit like the SS. You know,
in that they're kind of grey.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like the style of it.
Yeah, but I sort of think the nasty part of it is that it is homely.
Mm.
There are council flats that look like that.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't.
And they're not even run by.
they're run by Bristol City Council.
Yeah.
You know, and so that there is a sort of weird homeliness to it, but it's like you don't know who's behind each of these doors.
Yeah.
And they're all up to their own weird shit. Mm. And that is the kind of creepy part of it. I'm sure that in an expanded form, it could be even worse slash better. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a Paradise Towers
comic book
that I'd love to take a look at, actually. Mm. I forget who the publishers are. Cutaway Comics, yeah. And their stuff looks really cool.
They were supposed to send us some stuff, and it never arrived at my flat.
Damn, so we could have been reading Paradise Towers. We could have talked about it here, but...
Oh, well.
Well, you never know. And I also think someone else we haven't mentioned is the... not the chief caretaker.
Deputy.
The deputy, who is excellent. Mm. Yeah. Previously in Tomb of the Cybermen.
Yeah, he was supposed to be played by Roger Daltrey from The Who. Thank fuck that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Because that would have been awful.
Yeah, it would have just really... This story would have had no hope.
No, fucking Captain Brexit as the deputy chief caretaker. Jesus Christ.
He's really good. He has a very good rapport with both Sylve and with Richard Ryder.
And he's got a really nice arc where kind of at the end you think... Yeah, I kind of imagine you would have gone, all right, this has gone too far.
Yeah, yeah. He's turned a blind eye and,
But now this zombie bloke going, has wandered in. I think there's something a bit wrong here.
Yeah.
All right, well done. Thank you for smelling the roses eventually.
Have you got any more?
I've
got one from Bradley, who says, a bizarre little oddity. Although it is far from perfect and a mess in many respects, this story has grown on me considerably over the years. Despite Richard Brier's infamously bad acting and a group of caretakers with a collective IQ of 2, there is some menace to be found in the grungy set design and the cannibalistic old ladies.
There we go, the cannibalistic old letters. Yeah. And they are, available for your viewing pleasure on the season 24 box set. I would highly recommend everybody giving this another go.
Yeah.
Because it's well worth it.
Yeah, I think
it's a proper laugh.
Yeah.
And it's daft and it's silly. But it's sort of Doctor Who, that comment about it kind of grinding into another direction.
Yeah.
You get that impression through the story. It's like it's desperately trying to do something else.
It feels like, this feels like JNT's last hurrah.
Mm.
This is like JNT's last chance to put his stamp on the programme.
He's got his stunt casting in.
Yeah.
And it's worked all right until halfway through episode 3 or whenever the Cragnon appears.
Yeah. And then, obviously, season 25, you can feel more Andrew Cartmore coming in.
Yeah,
the young people, the young blood is coming in.
Yeah.
And JNT is sort of slowly fading into the background. Mm. And he'll be like, oh, well, here's, like you said, a bit of stunt casting. Here's an actor. Here's a bit of publicity. But otherwise,
I think you'll get on with it.
You kids know what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's how it kind of feels. So,
Well, there we go. Paralyzed Towers has gone from here to here in Matt's
bottom of the muffs to mid muff
to the top of the muffs. We would highly recommend everybody gives it a go. Matt, do you want to sign off? I've had enough muff talk for the rest of the evening.
Yes, therapy. I think by the time I leave here.
What are you going to do? When are you going back to the staff room tomorrow?
How can I go back
tomorrow?
To work tomorrow? I know.
What did you do last night, Johnny?
You don't want to know.
Talk about old dear's muffs.
Yeah, Nezu's muffs.
If you want to go and watch Tabby and Tilda, were they Tilda and Tabby?
Yeah.
In
having a munch.
Muff diving with cookies and cream too. Go to your local video store now. Otherwise, we're going to be back next time. What are we talking about next time, Billy?
We're talking about the backwaters of Doctor Who cartoons, being The Infinite Quest.
Oh yeah,
and
we're going to watch
Dreamland.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Wow.
I need to find a copy of both of them. And
I have The Infinite Quest on DVD.
And we need to find Dreamland somewhere.
It must be on like Dailymotion.
It's got to be. Somebody would have, it's not worth that
much. What is this we're talking about?
These were two animated episodes, 45 minutes each, aren't they, I think?
When?
2007
and
2009? Oh, 9,
is it? Was it not a part of the specials year?
Oh, it was part of the specials year. With David Tennant.
Oh, right.
Little animations, yeah.
Okay. One was Cosgrove Hall, one looks like it was animated by a serial killer. So we look forward to that, and we look forward to you watching it in due course as well. So we will leave you with muffs. See you later.
Yeah. Bye-bye.